FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. It's 2619. Well, last night was Trump's second State of the Union address. How did he do? Will it make a difference? Does anybody care? Well, we'll answer those questions a lot more. First, as always, if you hear something on the show that really gets to you, that you really think about, then why don't you send us an email? The address is kl@kerrylutz.com. Well, Dan Amaduri is with us, futuremoneytrends.com. And Dan, what about the State of the Union address? What was your takeaway from it?
I thought it was a great State of the Union speech, great address. You know, I am a Trump fan. I'll disclose right off the bat. First, I liked him just because he was anti-establishment. And I figured the enemy of my enemy is my friend. But then I kind of like what he's doing. I'm saddened that he has taken such ownership of the economy. And the stock market, just because I know he inherited a bubble economy. But I thought he did a really good job. I think he's doing a good job as a president. And it was really interesting to see how the Democrats wouldn't even clap for him highlighting an ICE officer who had helped save 1,500 girls who were being trafficked through our southern border. And they couldn't even stand up to clap for that, which was amazing. So I think for Trump, this was a big win last night. But there are some holes in the whole thing, as you know, and everybody who's listening to this show knows, you know, the State of the Union is not as strong as people would like it to seem. It's strong because we are borrowing annually about $1 trillion. This year, over the next 12 months, we're going to have about $400 billion in interest payments. Can you imagine $400 billion in just interest? It's the fastest growing part of our budget, our annual budget by percentage. And I believe in about 6 or 7 years, it's projected to be the third biggest thing in the budget. And that is factoring in and assuming these low, low, low interest rates. If interest rates went up, it could be the biggest thing overnight. Mm. So I think, the big elephant in the room is the national deficit and how we're basically living off of a credit card. But that wasn't discussed. But some of the other positive things were discussed. I thought Trump had a great night last night.
Yeah, well, I didn't watch the speech live. I just can't watch these political speeches, but I did watch the highlights. And the Democrats actually did stand up. I mean, what is this mm-hmm. point of the women wearing white? Do they want to look like nurses? This is the suffragette color. I mean, it's just pointless.
I thought it was the Democratic Party getting back to its roots. I thought that those were cake. I was waiting for them to put the hoods on for the Ku Klux Klan.
Yeah, well, the guy in Virginia there, Northam, the governor, he's very much in tune with that sentiment. But he was just a 25-year-old, and it was a big mistake. And he doesn't seem to want to quit, and I don't think they're going to fire him. So he'll be an ineffectual governor for a term. Virginia's turned blue. Doesn't matter. The only way to turn Virginia red again is to fire half the employees working for the federal government, because they all live in Virginia, because it's cheaper than living in Maryland, as we all know. So, but yeah, the part about the debt, he didn't mention debt, did he?
No, not at all. And he inherited $20 trillion of debt. I mean, that's a fact. And he's inherited all these, you know, things that have propped up the economy. And, you know, Trump has proven to be pretty smart many times. So I've kind of like, I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. Maybe he thinks he can grow his way out and hit some sort of reset. You know, I've talked to other congressmen. I know you have as well. And mm-hmm. oftentimes the same answer from no matter what, Democrat, Republican, they'll tell you, look, we know it's unsustainable, but we just know that nothing can get done until it's a crisis. And maybe that's Trump's thinking. Let's create as much prosperity as possible. And then at some point in time, we're just going to have to deal with this thing because it's just going to blow up in everybody's face. And that's probably about what's going to happen. It does bother me that, you know, the Fed has so much control over any president right now, more control than ever, because, you know, they know that the entire economy is being held together by them and the low interest rates. And that means the Fed can literally, if they don't like a president of the United States, they could simply raise the rates and crash the economy. They have so much control over our politicians, more than ever.
Well, here I have a way to solve the deficit and all future funding of the federal government. The federal government owns 50% of the state of California, 45%. So if they sell it to the Chinese or somebody, that's got to be worth, I mean, what's the state of California worth? It's got to, that would probably pay off the deficit overnight. Obviously, there's a few pieces we can't sell, but there's a lot of California that there is no reason for the federal government to own. They own 80% of Nevada, a bunch of Idaho, a bunch of Colorado, all these states they own, and they really have no business owning it. It was never intended by the founding fathers that the federal government would own, you know, large swaths of the West, Oklahoma.
Sure.
I mean, you name it. And the thing is, like, when you do a mineral claim there or drill for oil, you pay the federal government a very small royalty, especially compared to other countries. So, and you know, look at the fires, the wildfires in California, direct result of poor management of forests, a lot of other things too. Hey, you're in California now, I heard. So what is your takeaway on the state?
You know, it does remind me of a third world country in the sense that you have a lot of rich people. There's no denying that. California has some really rich areas, very wealthy people. But then you go, what's weird about California is you'll go not even a quarter mile away from these rich neighborhoods, and then it gets very poor. Or if you mingle with the middle class, they are basically hollowed out. They're all in debt. They're maxed out. Their car payments are $600 a month. They can't go any higher on their mortgages. And now California is mandating new homes to have solar panels, which, okay, you're going to tack on another $40,000 to every home that's being built. I don't know what the laws are going to be in the future on if older homes will have to eventually have this, you know, maybe in two decades or whatever. But right now, I mean, starting January 1st, 2020, every new home is going to have a solar panel, which is so stupid if they knew anything about mining, because in order to produce all these solar panels, they're going to have to mine the shit out of the earth. And it's not exactly the cleanest and most environmentally friendly thing to do. So the whole purpose of this thing, of course, is to prevent some sort of man-made climate change, regardless of whether you believe it or not. I think we all believe in less pollution, less bad things in our air, clean water. We all agree on that. But I don't think mandating solar panels is going to help, because it's a very dirty process to actually create the solar panels. Yep. So, but I'm in California and right now, and it is beautiful. The weather is perfect. The kids were hanging out at the beach. But, you know, it is what it is. You have to deal with these sociopaths that run Sacramento.
Yeah, they've been running the state into the ground. You know, you got $128 billion worth of debt, and I don't even think that includes how underfunded the pension plans are. So a lot of problems with California that are going to come to the forefront in the coming years.
Yeah, and they've really screwed up their weed launch, and it's so sad.
I know.
This state should be the dominator in cannabis, and they tagged on about a 30% all-in tax when you count local and state and everything, and it's killing everybody. You literally think about it. You buy $100 worth of cannabis, it's $130. It's ridiculous, and you've got all sorts of people. When I'm talking to different people, when I'm in the dispensaries or near a dispensary, I'll always make it a point to ask people where they get their cannabis or what kind of cannabis they buy, because I'm looking for what brands to invest in. And a lot of people are telling me, you know, I just come here when I'm short. Otherwise, I'm buying it all from Vegas. You know, so I think people are literally, a lot of people are just choosing to go, hey, I'm going to go have a great weekend in Vegas, and I'll come back with all the cannabis I need. Because, you know, they don't have this 30% tax going on in Nevada. And, you know, it's unfortunate that, you know, this should be a booming, thriving economy when it comes to their cannabis, and it's not. There's such disruptions that almost none of these dispensaries even have the product to sell you. You've got to literally order it and have it delivered to your house.
I visited a couple of dispensaries when I was out there because I was curious to see. And I found the help to be very competency challenged, so shall we say. Their selection compared to other states like Washington State, Oregon, and Colorado was terrible. And there was a 15% excise tax, plus they're like 11 or 12% sales tax. So like you said, close to 30%. And they figured out how to take a gold mine and turn it into garbage, because the public at large would much rather buy legal than illegal, because there's quality control, there's truth in labeling, all these protections that you have, and uniformity of product that you don't have when you buy illegally. Plus, you don't know if you can trust the person to not rob you or shoot you. So it really should have been a bonanza. And instead, it's in government. You know, they could look at Cuba. Cuba, best cigars in the world. But they have a shortage in Cuba because everybody's stealing them out of the factory, selling them on the black market. Same with sugar. Best sugar producer in the world. And they have a shortage of sugar. So this is what socialized systems do, Dan.
Yeah, you bring up a great point. The black market here is thriving for cannabis. And I've talked to one of these guys. I saw him at a wedding, met him I was asking him, I'm like, well, why don't you sell it legally? And he was like, it's such a nightmare to even try to set up a business. And then you start throwing the cannabis with all these new regulations, and they don't even know what the regulations are. A lot of times the local politicians.
Yeah, that's it.
And he was like, fuck that. He goes, I'll sell it. And what are they going to do? I mean, seriously, and it's true. What are they going to do, right? You got cannabis on you. It's legal.
Well, look at it this way. People have been getting arrested in Tennessee and Kentucky for moonshining since Prohibition ended. They're still doing it to this day. And no, it's not because the substance is illegal. You know, alcohol is legal, but it's controlled. And what does all the control come down to? The tax stamp on the top of the bottle. When you open up that cork, there's that little frilly piece of paper there. And that shows that the tax has been paid on the alcohol. And that's what we're going to have with cannabis. I mean, we have it with cigarettes, Dan, where New York State charges like $18 a pack for a pack of cigarettes. Now, I haven't smoked in over 40 years. I don't care. But the point is, when you can go to North Carolina and they have a dollar a pack tax, and I think you could buy them for $3-4 a pack, bring up 1,000 packs to Manhattan, sell them for $8, you make $4 a pack. That's $4,000. And then they go and they get rubber stamps made up for the tax stamp. And most of the cigarettes being sold in Manhattan and New York State untaxed. This is what they're doing to cannabis. It's the same. Government learns nothing, Dan.
Yeah. Remember the I can't breathe guy? He died because he was selling freaking cigarettes outside of a liquor store.
Right. Onesies, they call them. I mean, that's what they used to do. And like my father would tell me, he'd go buy a cigarette or two cigarettes for like 3 cents outside. There was a guy outside the store because he couldn't afford a pack. And I guess untaxed cigarettes is a capital crime worse than human trafficking, you know, right? Worse than white slavery. Untaxed cigarettes, untaxed cannabis, untaxed alcohol. Those are the major crimes in society, right?
Yeah. And I thought Trump's speech last night, he brought up a great point. I don't know if you saw it or read through all of the highlights, but one of the best lines in it was he talked about how immigration is one of the biggest disparities between the Americans and the politicians, because the politicians surround themselves with walls and gates and guards. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, they don't want to do that. And he brought up that El Paso put up a wall and crime went virtually to zero. There was over 700 murders just on the other side of that wall.
Correct.
Last year. And El Paso had about 19 last year versus 700 just on the other side. And then same thing for San Diego. Crime collapsed and border crossings collapsed once they had the wall.
Yeah, and I have to tell you, you know, he's so smart because he knows construction. Like some idiot reporter asked him, well, it's not a concrete wall. Aren't you falling back on your campaign promise? And it's like, look, this is better than a wall. It's better than concrete. Well, the fact of the matter is, I have no way of proving this, but I know how clever Trump can be because I've met him and I've dealt with him. Those steel grates, whatever you want to call them, with the slats, I guarantee you cost probably about 15% of what a concrete barrier would cost, because you got to have rebar in the concrete, everything else. And then it's so much heavier, the installation is much, much more labor intensive than just putting up the slats and welding them to a support. So probably it's about a third the cost of concrete. So they think that they've given him 115 miles of barrier, but in reality, he's probably going to get 350 miles out of the amount of money they allocated. The wall is going to be much cheaper than anyone thought. This is a pure Trumpian genius. Oh, it's going to be $25 billion, so just give me five. And with that five, he will complete most of it in most of the areas where it's required. I'm telling you, man, I know this is, I could just see it because they're so stupid. It's like, see this hand, watch out for that one, right? It's the art of distraction, and he's a master at it.
He is. It's fun watching him, to be honest with you. They were all saying that he blinked and Pelosi won on the government shutdown. But honestly, if you look at the Rasmussen polling, it shows him right at 48%, pretty much where he was before.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the one that was most accurate. And I think that's one of the ones that's most unbiased when they do their polling. And meanwhile, the Congress actually is at it's never pulled lower.
Yeah.
So
all of them
just shows you
they're all completely corrupt, evil, and just awful people. And hey, what are you going to do, though? You know, this is the government. This is what we live under. We really can't do a heck of a lot except hope for the best, because there's nothing else to do. But, you know, this generation that's coming up here, the AOC generation, I mean, she is the most frightening person in America.
But I'm glad you brought her up, because everybody listening to this show needs to realize that's who's coming. Mm-hmm. That and a big mob behind her.
Yes.
So get your finances in order. You know, make sure you have some money that's out of the banking system, like gold or even physical cash or, cash value policy. I know that can be controversial, but there are certain reasons why you might want something that's, IRS proof, like even an IRA and a 401k. I'm not a huge advocate of those things, but they are typically protected from lawsuits. They're even protected from the IRS. I mean, I'm just talking about just really being on like the defense when it comes to your money.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I find her, it's not her words. She's an idiot. She's stupid. She never has her facts straight. But hey, it's where her heart's at. It's the important thing, Dan. It's not the facts. Facts don't matter. It's the purity of your heart and how you figure that out in somebody. I don't know. Her stupidity, I don't care about. But what she shows is that this generation, these millennials, they regard stupidity as a virtue. And that is frightening. That's like 1984, ignorance through strength, strength through ignorance, right?
Sure.
Good is bad, bad is good. So it's a lack of critical thinking, a lack of the ability to independently think and come up with conclusions. I mean, look, Dan, remember when Hugo Chavez took over Venezuela? The first thing he did was nationalize Exxon. So, like, I don't particularly care for Exxon. Historically, I'm really not a fan. But they happen to be pretty good at not so much finding oil anymore. They don't really care about that. They're not into exploration. But in terms of the supply chain, pipelines,
sure,
refineries, gas stations, they happen to be pretty good at that. And once they fired them and took all their assets in Venezuela, that country was on a downward spiral from the beginning. And isn't that the definition of socialism? governmental expropriation of privately held assets. It always comes down to that, right?
Sure. And it, I mean, it's they're fascists as well. I mean, you look at what their policies are. They want to prevent companies from doing stock buybacks. None of their business, regardless of whether you think it's right or wrong. It's none of their business. And they want to tax us, the wealthy, between 70% to 90%. Again, I mean, you might as well just nationalize our businesses if you're going to take 70% of our income.
Yeah, they'd like to do that too, but they're not communists, so they won't admit that they want to do that. But you know they want to do it. I know they want to do it. Everyone knows what they're about. But socialism always fails. From the pilgrims landing and having communal farms and nearly starving to death, but then the Indians, the indigenous peoples of the United States, came to their rescue. But then once Bradford split up the land and everybody had their own piece of land, and then they wound up having surpluses and they turned the corner. But collectivism almost destroyed the New World. And it's doing it now, you know, every place it's tried. And Africa's a mess because it's not market driven. We're a mess because we're not free market oriented enough. When you look at the worst sectors of the economy, it's all where the free market hasn't been allowed to function. Medicine, student loans, right?
Housing
is a classic example. The whole housing bust. All because the free market isn't allowed to function. And that's banking, too. The country is a mess. The banks are a mess. I don't care what their capital ratios are. Banking is a mess. And it's because the market isn't allowed to function.
It's so true. But they don't see it. And it's funny, these socialists in office now in the United States, they assume that they're going to tax us 70%. And we're just going to go about still doing like we're their slave. No, they'll see what every socialist country sees, or even states like California. Yep. The rich are going to flee. They're going to leave. They're going to capital always goes where it's treated best. So they're going to go. They're going to leave the country if they have to, or they're going to go to Texas or wherever they have to go. And they're going to flee. And they're going to take their businesses and their prosperity and their innovation and their job creation, all of that. And, you know, all these, you know, there's not even a single case in history where a poor country becomes wealthy because they implemented socialism. There are only examples, these countries like Denmark, which have reasonably free market economies, they're used as examples, but people don't consider, that, at least the socialists don't, like Bernie Sanders, that what made Denmark great, think about it. Denmark had capitalism. So the only time socialism even works is it works temporarily after capitalism hands it the baton of here's this great economy. And yes, it's flourishing, and usually they have a nation state like Poland, Denmark has some of the strictest immigration laws in the world. So they got that place on lockdown when it comes to who's getting in. And, you know, they that's their example. You know, by the way, they're completely subsidized by oil.
Yeah, of course.
But, you know, again, there are no examples. Bottom line, not a single one where a country has become great because of socialism. There isn't a single one, but there are hundreds of examples with capitalism.
Ongoing examples happening right now before your very eyes, where countries are diminishing because of socialism. All over Africa, we see it, and they're more socialistic. South America, besides Venezuela, you know, Ecuador is a mess. Bolivia is a mess. And these countries have not, Peru is a mess. And it's a great mining area. It used to be the top producer of silver in the world. So we just see it over and over again. Anyways, we got to run, but futuremoneytrends.com. You can read Dan's collective wisdom there. And hey, while you're at it, you're watching this on YouTube, listening to it on YouTube, I should say, because we're not doing video, or you're just listening to a podcast, please subscribe, like, and share. Subscribe, like, share. Really helps me a lot when you do that. Really helps get the show out, get the word out, and get the ideas out. More importantly, because we got to do something to counteract the effects of AOC before it's too late. At least we have to try. And she's got a Twitter army out there that literally attack anybody who levies any reasonable criticism against her. That's the beginning of it all. Anyway, Dan, great having you on. Hey, by the way, if you've got a question for Dan, myself, email kl@carrielutz.com. Talk to you again soon, Dan. Be well.
Thank you very much.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.